home of Notre Dame football. 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is drip.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Coming to you from Five Star Dive Bar, downtown Elkhart, in the former State Theater, 526 South Main Street, as we get ready for a little lunchtime sports conversation. How are we doing today, Mr. Sharpley?
Are you going to try to break my record for the wings last week?
Bad news.
Or is anybody else going to?
They're smoking the fresh batch of wings right
Perfect.
Now. So by the time you know anyone who shows up and wants the wings gets here, they'll be freshly smoked and ready to go. So I'm subbing in buffalo chicken salad for the
Ooh.
Wings today. So I can't even approach your record.
I don't think you'd have any chance though.
What do you think? How many did you down? Did you get the full 2 pounds last week?
I just did the 1 pound. That would be the next step is doing the 2 pound challenge.
1 pound about 2.5 minutes or so.
Well, it's just you had to get it done within a commercial break. That's the challenge.
That's true. You kind of cheated though because you had no hot sauce on your wings.
But I used. Well, yeah, that's right. I just had them. You know, I had regular wings.
I had full hot sauce on mine. You just had.
But I dipped them in the ranch. Does that count at all?
No, that's. That's still, it's a little easier. It's just like no condiments on the hot dogs.
That's strategery.
Yeah, that's right. Or no buns on the hot dog, I guess. You know, it's like.
There's a documentary coming out about that, the whole hot dog eating.
Joey Chestnut, the whole thing?
Yeah, and Kobayashi.
Really?
It was quite a rivalry, apparently.
Kind of interested to see that. When's that? Was it like a Netflix, or do you know?
I think it was like a 30 for 30 type of.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So probably just in time for the 4th of July and the
Most
hot dog
likely.
Eating contest.
That's probably what it is.
All right. I'm looking forward to that. Have to see that. That always
pick up a few tips.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What's your all-time record on hot dogs?
Oh, my goodness. Probably two.
Yeah.
Don't
want to overeat.
Two is for what is it? Four is my limit on Schnitzendruben.
Oh,
the Blazing Saddles. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah,
another Schnitzendruben. Buffalo fried chicken sandwich with fries for $8 is the lunchtime special here at Five Star Dive Bar today, downtown Elkhart. And again, they'll have the freshest batch of smoked wings ready here this afternoon. A pound for $7, 2 pounds for $12. Thank you very much.
And here comes your food right now.
That's right, and my food, and we are ready to go. Jump in on any of those cucumbers
that you want. If you're not going to eat the cucumbers, what are you talking about?
Not a cute kind of guy. So,
all right.
A lot of different things going on. We were talking right before. We went on the air, Mishawaka baseball for a semi-state as they keep right on rolling. Three consecutive shutouts by the pitching staff going back to the sectional championship game.
Tell you what, that helps quite a bit.
I mean, it doesn't matter what level you're at. If you talk about it, you're going to have success at the high school, college, major league level. Pitching is it.
Throw that ball well.
It's very right.
Throw strikes, get people out.
So between Sam Shively and Grant Jablonski, the two starters, and Ryan Watt, who comes in with a little fireball at the end, leading the state with 9 saves now, by the way.
Wow.
Their closer, Ryan Watt, is after he saved two of the last three games. Grant Jablonski pitched a complete game in the regional semifinal against Northridge, and then Sam Shively, 5 shutout innings. Got into a little trouble once, but a 1-2-3 double play kind of gets you out of a little trouble as well.
Some momentum probably, too.
Yep, exactly. So
that's cool.
Tomorrow.
Well, we could just chalk it up to the fact, though, that you're calling these games.
That could be it. I mean, The football team went to semi-state. 12 different guys on the from the football team also on this baseball semi-state roster.
They say something about playing multiple sports helps, I think. Is that one of those things?
That's a rumor. There's a handful of guys like A.J. Rosebush, Jablonski, Shively, both of them also play basketball. So you've got some three-sport guys on this team, too.
I like them even better.
Pretty amazing stuff. We'll have that game at about 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon live from Plymouth. It's Mishawaka and Hamilton Southeastern.
How's the weather looking?
It's looking like it's supposed to be like today. So
I like that.
Supposed to be a great weekend.
Good.
Perfect weekend for baseball.
It's a birthday weekend for my daughter. She turns 2 tomorrow. So
all the
shenanigans for that start. So.
Any big birthday plans?
We have some family coming in on Sunday to break in our new deck out on the Simonton Lake here in Elkhart.
Okay.
So if it's nice both days, we should be great.
Sounds good. Well,
Masha and the Bear is the theme.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a T for two.
Happy birthday to Lucy.
That's
and
right.
Enjoy the weather and the water out there tomorrow, then, it sounds like. Also, good luck to the Bremen girls softball team playing in the 2A state championship.
How about that? Back-to-back years.
Yep. They'll take on Tecumseh at 1:30 tomorrow at Purdue. And from what I heard, they were co-number one teams in the state in the last poll of the season. So should be a really good matchup for them tomorrow.
That's good. Let's see it.
Yep. As you said, state runner-up last year and back battling for a state championship. Kalen Shively, their main pitcher, of course, has the same last name as the Mishawaka pitcher, Sam Shively. And so I asked him this week, so are you two related? And he said, I don't know. He said, maybe we're distant cousins. I have no idea. So
both
no one's,
are pretty good off the mound, though.
No one's ever checked the lineage on that. So I thought that was kind of fun. I don't know. We might be. There's
cool. All right.
Always a chance, I guess. So, again, we'll have Mishawaka semi-state baseball against Hamilton Southeastern about 4 o'clock tomorrow. Pre-game will begin about 30 minutes before first pitch. We'll have an interview with John Hemmer, the head coach, and also those three pitchers I mentioned. They had a little media day earlier this week, and I got together with all three of them, Ryan Watt, Sam Shively, Grant Jablonski, and we'll have that tomorrow as well. Plus, at 6:07 tonight, the second hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, we've got a little announcement. I've got a very special guest analyst who's going to be with me tomorrow.
All right.
And we'll be announcing that right at the start of the first hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat tonight.
Perfect.
So that's
T-minus 4 hours away.
Yeah, a little tease. We'll have some fun with that.
Awesome.
And I think fans are going to be excited to hear who it is when we make the announcement. So a little tease for that. Okay, 87 days until Notre Dame kicks off the football season. You ready to jump into some football talk?
Well, why not? Let's go for it.
We've got some baseball talk coming up because we got cut off talking some Notre Dame baseball last week.
And I do have, I'm kind of throwing this at you, I have a baseball poll for you, too.
Okay.
A baseball poll for movies.
All right.
Brought to you through via Twitter. We can get to that later, though.
Okay, I'm interested to hear that. This is the 30th anniversary of Field of Dreams, by the way, speaking of baseball. Is that where this derived?
They're on that list.
Okay.
They are.
Okay.
It's a bracket play for the all-time best baseball movies.
All right. A friend of mine this week found out he has never seen Bull Durham.
Wow.
And he considers himself a sports fan. He's well over 30 years old. He's never seen Bull Durham.
I don't mean to toss my wife under the bus, but that's kind of the same as she lives and grew up in Goshen and has never seen Hoosiers.
Really?
No.
I thought that was kind of like required if you grew up in Indiana.
That's what I figured, maybe below the year of, you know, if you're 5 years old, you have to see it by the time you're 5.
Okay. Well, I'm interested to see your bracket as we get into that. We'll do that here in just a few minutes. Let's talk some football.
Okay.
First, 87 days till Notre Dame kicks off the football season, September 2nd.
Yeah.
We've been doing our whole what we're looking forward to when the Irish kick off the season. So this is week number 3 of that. So let's start with you.
Okay.
What are you most looking forward to?
Well, this one is I'm a little scared to talk about this one.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with defense and it has nothing to do with offense. Sean, it has to do with the special teams.
Very legitimate.
There's quite a bit that has walked out the door as of last year on the special teams.
Justin Yoon, for example.
Justin Yoon, an all-time leading scorer in Notre Dame history.
Yep.
And, correct me if I'm wrong, a 3-year starter at punter. Is that correct? Or was it 4?
I think it's 3.
Okay, so multiple-year starter on both the punt team and also kickoff and field goal.
Yeah.
So you have some big shoes to fill.
Legitimate concern, yeah.
Production is concerned, and consistency. I mean, you know, Notre Dame does a great job of bringing in guys and recruiting just outside of the skill position, offense and defense, and bringing in guys that are, you know, very talented as far as the kicking game, punting, long snapper. I was calling for, I believe, a Heisman Trophy for a long snapper maybe a couple years ago, but Quentin Nelson kind of took that reign over. I still am really bummed that year that they didn't push harder for him as the Heisman Trophy. Or that's neither here nor there. Anyways, the special team side of things.
And 33 is, trucking instead.
Yes, 33 trucking. I don't. Anyways.
Should have been 56 trucking.
Yeah, there we go. But just, you know, who is going to step up into these different roles on special teams and you know, be able to do it consistently? You know, there's one thing in practice to be able to do it, but now that you're the guy, I mean, there is both, you know, perceived pressure that you may put on yourself, but also pressure, I think, from the coaching staff and saying, we've had guys that have now been doing this. They did it, you know, Justin Yoon, for example, he did it for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a guy who's a one-year starter and now is gone. We're talking about guys that have been doing this for multiple years, and there are going to be new faces now. And in a very important part of the game, too, if you're talking about flipping field position. And if you look at the identity of this team, Sean, where, you know, it's not the same defense that we saw a year ago as yeah. far as a lot of seniors, a lot of guys that we knew probably were going to be putting up some pretty big numbers within production points. You know, there are some question marks on the defensive side where you maybe aren't going to be able to, you know, rely on the defense
yeah.
maybe 100% of the time to get stops, where the offense is going to have to score points.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be, you know, if it is, you know, if you need to pin someone back and flip field position from the punt game, or if you do stall, you need points. You know, it's, I think this is a team that's going to have to score touchdowns.
I agree.
But if that's not the case, are you going to have someone you can rely on that's going to be able to consistently put the ball through the uprights?
I mean, really good points, because during spring practice, the field goal kicking specifically was inconsistent. It got a little bit better towards the end. I mean, there were different long snappers in the operation, but you do have a new place kicker yeah. in there. And there's a preferred walk-on as well as, you know, the incumbent already here. So yeah. This summer, it's going to, you know, I think it's going to turn into more of a competition. We didn't get to see.
I don't know if those are ever great.
Yeah, we didn't get to see much of the punting until the blue-gold game. It was pretty rough in the blue-gold game as well. So those are very valid points. I think that a special teams as a group has not really lived up to maybe what we thought that it could
Can
over the last
Ian
few
Book
years.
Pooch punt.
You might have to, all right? Man.
You've called quite a few football games. I want to ask you if you've ever seen this, and I doubt that this will come into play at the collegiate level, but when I played at Marshall High School, our JV coach, one of their fourth down packages was to line up in shotgun a little bit deeper mm-hmm. in a pooch punt style, and the quarterback would actually catch it, and he would throw it underhand so it looked like a punt to the receiving team. So the thought process on this is...
So did he get
is, ready?
An interception?
That's it. The thought process on this is if you throw it high enough and it looks enough like a punt and the guy who's returning it maybe doesn't recognize that, he has the option of, if he catches it, it's technically an interception. But let's say it's not, you know, it's not near him or by him, the two gunners could go and catch it, and it's a reception.
Interesting.
This worked. You'd be surprised.
Never seen that.
How often this actually worked.
Huh.
Because the other play with it would be is if the receiver goes and makes a play on it and gets hit, it's pass interference. First down.
You guys use that quite a bit?
I was never on the JV, so I didn't.
So it was the JV coach. Okay.
The JV coach, he would. That was like a staple in their package.
Hmm.
On fourth down. And it wasn't, you know, if they're backed up, they usually would punt.
Well, yeah.
We're talking about, you know, like maybe plus 35, even, well, probably plus 40.
Somewhere at least midfield.
Yeah, around midfield or so. And then certainly within that, because usually at the high school level, you don't have someone who's going to be booting, you know, 40-yard field goals.
Yeah.
that made more sense to either try to pick up a penalty as pass interference or actually catch the ball. The worst case scenario was it's intercepted and you tackle him like a punt would be.
Right. It's a very interesting situation. Yeah, the closest thing I've seen is like the pooch kicking kind of thing that that you mentioned, like Ira Armstead, for example, a guy you've worked with from Adams. They would kind of line him up.
His recruitment has just...
It's taken off now. Who was the latest offer that I saw?
Virginia was his first Power 5, yeah.
Man, it is on the rise right now.
Like, he got his first one rolled in, and ever since then, early spring, it's just been one after the other.
I think that when you look at his athleticism, one, and the arm that he has as well, I mean, it's like, obviously, Lamar Jackson is in the NFL right now, but there's some reminiscent, you know, it's still fairly raw as far as the talent goes, but a lot of tools there that you can build up to. I mean, and that's awesome.
The 6'4 with speed and a strong arm, coaches like to hear and see that.
Can't coach those two things, can you?
No, you can't. No, you can't. Okay. All right, well, how about you then? I talked about special teams. What do you
think? So yours is more a concern, so.
Yeah.
And
but I am. I mean, I am looking forward to seeing what that's going to look like because I think that may play a pretty big role.
Oh, it will. One way or the other, it's going to.
Week one, when we talked about this, my focus was on Ian Book, and I think most people are looking at that. There's going to be a lot on his shoulders. Last week was another concern from me on who's going to step up at the linebacker position. So this team, I think, if we're comparing it, and it's not always fair to do that to last year, there were more certainties last year.
Definitely.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how, you know, X, Y, and Z are going to go out there and perform because we knew.
Although you could argue that the biggest concern on
the
team
was the quarterback position.
Exactly.
That's true.
And that's obviously ended up being a change. Ian Book was still relatively unknown as far as what we thought we would get from him. And obviously he's taken up things to another level. So mine that I'm looking forward to, with this being 87 days to go until the start of the season, I'm just going to stick with that theme, and I'm going number 87, Michael Young, a guy who I think should get more opportunities than he's had. You know, all this talk about the young guys, the sophomore receivers, whether it's Braden Lindsay, Kevin Austin, that whole group, Lawrence Keys, and that group. Michael Young had a nice spring, and with Miles Boykin gone, Chase Claypool jumped over to Boykin's old spot at the boundary receiver. So Michael Young got some opportunities at that X receiver. I mean, a lot of different guys were out there, but I mean, he looked good. I mean, he looks like he could be in line with the skill set that he has. He's not the biggest guy like Claypool or Boykin, but he's got some speed. He's got some good hands. We saw him make plays out there. He had a 66-yard catch and run against Wake Forest last year, which ended up being the longest passing play of the entire season for Notre Dame. And one of Chip Long's focuses in the spring and is going to be going into this season as well is more yards after catch, get more yak. And so I think that's an area where when Michael Young gets his hands on the ball and what opportunities he has, that he can do some of that. Troy Pride Jr. kind of reminded people, don't forget about Michael Young. He reminded us of that during the spring when we were asking about some of those sophomores. So that's a guy that I'm kind of looking at early on, see what kind of opportunities he gets to do some damage.
There should be a lot of excitement with this receiving core, albeit young and inexperienced. But if you have a guy who, like Ian Book, is consistently completing around 70% of his passes, and also, too, I mean, one of his major strengths game in and game out last year was that he was distributing the ball pretty evenly across all position groups, but also
kind of like Brady-esque, regardless of where they are.
It was part of the system versus really locking in on one guy. And I think that, and Sean, you brought this question up maybe last month on, you know, is there going to be a 1,000-yard receiver? And I think that would be tough just based on, number one, how the offense is structured with Chip Long, and two, the type of quarterback that Ian Book is. I don't think it means that there's going to be a lack of production. I think you could see 3, 4, 5 guys have really good
500 to 800 yards
productive
or so
seasons where it's, I mean, I guess if you want to call them average numbers, but there isn't maybe one guy that's like, you know, 1,200 to 1,500 yards and all the touchdowns. I think you could, and for an offense too, That makes it quite a bit of fun. And for a defense that's game planning against that offense, it makes it very difficult because you're maybe not going to roll coverage over one guy because there's a number of different ways that you can get hurt.
Well, yeah, that's a really good point. And the tight ends are going to be a bigger factor. I think they're going to continue in year three under Chip Long. I think they're going to continue to be a bigger factor in the offense. You're going to have Cole Kmet,
so.
Brock
Wright. We
keep
talking about this. I feel like we've been talking about this for the last 8 years.
Well, but when you look at the actual production, I think fans maybe want more, and maybe you did too for that matter. But like when you look at the numbers, it has been on the uptick over the last few years.
It's just not off hard.
It's just not big gaudy numbers, I guess.
And I think we were spoiled too. You know, we were spoiled
with the kind of tight ends who are here.
You know, there was Fasano and Rudolph and Eifert and Carlson and those
Nicholas guys.
Yeah, and that was kind of really the tail end then of And part of it, too, is if you look at how, like, a guy like Eifert was used, and the tight ends really haven't been used to that extent probably in the last 3 to 5 years where he was playing in the slot. You know, they'd line him up sometimes as a receiver, motioned out, ISO'd in the red zone. And not that, you know, the players that have been on the roster aren't or weren't capable of doing that in the last 3 to 4 years. It just really – they had other guys in the receiver position that could do that. I think I would be excited to see a guy like Cole Kmet be in that type of role, because who's probably going to motion out with him is going to be either a small nickelback or linebacker. That's probably going to be a mismatch.
Are you surprised that regardless whether it was Alize Mack or Kmet or whoever, that because of Book's ability to get it out quickly and his accuracy short, that maybe there wasn't one of those other tight ends who really was statistically more than what they were last year?
Well, going into the season, I think the expectations, I think, from a lot of people were to see a little more of that mid-range, over-the-middle game and production, specifically probably with the tight end position grow because it had been lacking. But overall, I mean, I think that the offense is in a pretty good position with what they were able to do a season ago and now moving into this year. But with the growth and maturity of, you know, an inline blocker like Brock Wright, a guy like Cole Kmet, who I think can be a two-way type of player who can catch and block, you can probably use him in a couple of different formations. And, you know, and for the average listener, too, watching the game, you know, if you go either a two tight end set, which Chip Long used quite a bit at Memphis, a lot of two tight end sets, what it does for a defense, and even a one tight end set, too, is if you're in base personnel, what does that do for a defense? The defense is then going to sub in their base personnel, which means probably an additional linebacker. Because they want to try to combat two blocking tight ends. Well, now if you have a two-way tight end who can catch passes, who is a little more versatile, you line him up in the slot. Now you have a win as far as personnel is concerned. Being able to, I think, play around with the type of personnel that they have and getting maybe a defense on the field that is more beneficial for the offense is going to be pretty important.
Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, five-star dive bar in downtown Elkhart. Stop on by for lunch. The lunch special today is the Buffalo Fried Chicken Sandwich with fries. You get it all for just $8. So
that was a lot of X's and O's there, wasn't it?
It was. That was you had me going, and I was looking at the chalkboard in my mind.
I blacked out and woke up, and I don't know. I'm not 100% sure what I said there.
Or I guess the whiteboard, I should say, the way it is these days with the marker. Of course, Brian Kelly, at his golf outing earlier this week, talked with the media a little bit, said he hasn't named his captains yet, and that's at the end of the spring he addressed it. So you're being a little sarcastic there. Do you think it's a big deal that going into the summer they don't have captains?
I don't know if it's a big deal, but it is. I'm cautiously optimistic about that, because normally you have, you know, usually in the off season there are guys that start to step up as leaders,
right?
I think it's disconcerting.
That you get through the whole spring and you're still not there.
And you're not sure who the guys are that are going to be in leadership positions. I'm not predicting or saying this is going to be, you know, a 4-8 season, but that year I remember distinctly because I was at quite a few of the media days and then also a lot of Brian Kelly press conferences, and they did not have captains named early that year.
Yeah.
And it was,
and that prompted him the following year to name captains
early
in December.
Yeah. And it was, you know, a lot of the discussion on that was, we didn't know. We need guys to step up. And so, you know, that part of it for me, I don't want to overplay it because I don't think it needs to be necessarily overplayed. But it is something certainly that I think is a little upsetting for me.
And he says he wants to see kind of how the interaction and stuff like that goes, who steps up during the summer workouts and those kind of things. I mean, it seems like a guy like Alohi Gilman would be a slam dunk on the defensive side of the ball. Robert Hainsey is one of the big candidates, the veteran, on the offensive side of the ball. But really, when you sit there and look, when you lose guys like Drew Tranquil and just some of the guys that they've lost, it does seem like there is a void that needs to be filled. But at the same time, again, because of the fact that they've named him in December before, and then you go all the way through spring and you're still wondering, it would seem like it's at least a little bit of a concern. Not that necessarily even that the captains haven't been named, but just that what's the leadership on this team going to look like this year? Because there's some big question marks.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't really think names have really even been discussed.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. It's like, hey, we really like what this guy's doing, you know, leading the defense on this side. We're going to wait a little bit longer to name our full group of captains, maybe, because it's not even that. It's not – we're sure of two guys. We don't really know yet.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, last football question for now anyway, and then we'll move on. Notre Dame didn't face any teams that were coming off a bye last year en route to going 12-0.
I can't believe, because I feel like every year they do.
Isn't it amazing?
And even back, you know,
2 years ago they faced five.
Yeah.
Which is nuts when you think about it. But now they face seven. Seven different teams
that's
off a bye.
That's unusually high.
How big a concern is that?
Five. It's like the perfect storm almost for me. It's your
perfect storm, and the ACC appears to be conspiring to make sure everybody has a bye.
There's something going on here.
That's right.
It is most definitely calculated and smart.
Yeah.
If you are able to and can ask for that built into your season, 100% do it. If you're going to play, you know, if it's an out of conference game against Notre Dame, who is right now is trying to schedule and set up their schedule where they are potentially going to be in the mix for the college football playoffs.
Do you think that, not that all of them are ACC, because, you know, you've got Bowling Green, Navy, New Mexico as three of those teams who are doing it. Obviously, it makes sense for them to do it. But do you think that maybe the ACC is starting to prod a little bit, sending a message? It's like, you might want to think about full membership in the ACC. Do you think that could have anything to do with it?
This might be their long-term play. I don't know. But it's, you know, it happens most years, and that's why, you know, it was surprising that it wasn't something that happened a year ago. But, I mean, every year, and I, as a player, it wasn't something that we really focused or thought about. But now that I'm removed, I think my eyes have been a little more opened up to the fact that a lot of teams, if they can, they do try to schedule their bye week where it falls in line with the week before they play Notre Dame.
Yeah. Notre Dame, by the way, 5-0 2 years ago en route to going 10-3 when they did have five teams coming off a bye.
So, I mean, there's statistics you can talk about, and certain coaches are better coming off of bye weeks and all of those things. So, the perfect storm that I'm kind of talking about is you don't have a team with a lot of senior leaders and a lot of
That's true.
That's the more concerning thing to me.
When you talk about one and then the other, yeah.
So when you're asking me, like, are you buying or selling that there's concern? The concern for me starts prior to that. You know, it starts with the fact that there aren't captains named yet, and you have a lot of holes and question marks that you're going to fill, because these may be players that haven't really dealt with that type of situation.
Yeah.
Whether, like I just said, I didn't think about it as a player, but whether it's perceived or not, you know, that's something that...
So one by itself might not be
correct.
A big issue,
you know,
but when, yeah.
If you were to have the same conversation with me last year and say, hey, all 12 teams are playing against Notre Dame Well, let's say, you know, halfway in the season, once Ian Book takes over and the mm-hmm. offense is really clicking, you say, every team the remainder of the year, the final eight games, all have a bye against Notre Dame. I probably wouldn't have been too worried about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, fast forward to this year where there are far more question marks in a number of different realms, I think is more concerning for me. And that's why I kind of call it the perfect storm, is more the makeup of the team than the schedule itself.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Very good point, Evan Sharpley. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, we'll get into a little Notre Dame baseball conversation. We've got some NFL, Major League Baseball, the whole thing with the netting and home runs are on the rise. We'll do all that when we return. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley at Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, back at Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart. Stop by, join us for lunch. It's a beautiful day outside. We were talking about, yeah, they've got
so
a patio
nice. They do.
Outside. We're gonna have to do some research on that. We might end up
some
on the patio
R&D.
Sometime in the near future.
I would like that, especially I can work on my tan because my arms are pretty
Sun's out, guns out.
They're pretty pasty today, though.
By the way, I saw you've got – what have you got going on tonight at Sharpley Train?
Well, it's in Coldwater, Michigan.
Okay.
So kind of near my old stomping grounds, but it's only an hour away. We have a Friday Night Lights football camp, a three-hour football camp for our high school players, really the quarterback position and then skill position, so running backs, tight ends, and receivers. So we'll have 3 hours where we're working on, you know, speed, agility, some strength, some conditioning, some explosiveness, and then certainly we'll throw, we'll run some routes. So we're really excited. We do one of those a month right now, leading up until when football starts in August. But those are a lot of fun. We have a really good time, and there'll be some other ones that we kind of call pop-up camps that may happen or may occur if another school is like, wow, that's pretty cool. Maybe we should do one of those.
Yeah.
But we'll have one this month, tonight, and then next month we have one that's going to be in South Bend, and then the last one's going to be in Elkhart. So
all right.
We've got a good spread of those.
All right. Good deal. So you've got...
Yeah, real quick. Yeah, I mean, we're talking, you know, we're going to talk a little more baseball here too, but Kirsten Roos, who's the stud softball player, she plays four sports at Lakeland High School, put together a bracket on Twitter on the best baseball movies of all time, and I figure we'd at least take maybe like and try to get to a Final Four, because I had a tough time on this getting to my favorite one.
I bet.
So let's run this down in round one, and there are two movies that have buys into the second round.
Okay. Got to be Field of Dreams, one of them, right?
It is not.
Oh.
Two movies, and this is her list.
Okay.
There are two that have buys. One is The Sandlot, and you're already shaking your head. Is that because there was a Sandlot 2 made? Have you seen The Sandlot 2?
I don't think I saw the
Me
second
either.
One.
Okay. And Major League is
how
the
are you
other
gonna
one.
How are you gonna, you know,
I'm a yeah, well,
Major
yeah.
League has, I mean, Major League,
League
I like,
Major
but
League
I don't know if
is
I'd give it a buy.
So here's what we have. In round one, we have Bull Durham versus Bad News Bears.
Man.
We have the Benchwarmers versus Eight Men Out, which I'm glad the Eight Men Out made the cut. We have Field of Dreams versus Little Big League.
Okay.
For the Love of the Game versus The Rookie.
Okay.
A League of Their Own and Moneyball.
Ooh.
And then we have Rookie of the Year and Fever Pitch.
I mean, so A League of Their Own and Moneyball are both potential, like, two seeds going head-to-head in the first round. This,
so
is like,
Moneyball,
this is like sectionals in Indiana.
Moneyball in this one was actually, like, one of the lowest-seeded movies. Moneyball was. Yeah. So based on those right there, let's just try to get to give me your final four of those.
Bull Durham.
Okay, Bull Durham.
Field of Dreams. And this is no particular order. Field
That's
of Dreams.
Fine. Okay.
And I'm trying to remember everything right there. Moneyball would be in the
Moneyball's
final four.
Moneyball's in there. You're a big Moneyball fan, huh?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Did you like it? Have you
I
seen
it? I like the movie. Yeah, I've read the book, too.
I've got it.
Yeah.
Own it.
Yeah.
It's at home. Oh, the fourth one. I'd put Major League in there.
You're going to go Major League?
Yep.
Okay.
Sandlot just gets left out,
it's,
I think.
It's done.
Yeah.
Now, so there's obviously the original Bad News Bears, and then there's the new one, too.
Which is, and I
actually really like the new one.
I can't remember if I don't think I've seen the new one from start to finish, but there's like so much.
Billy Bob's in that one.
There's like so much Tanner Boyle from the original that would never make it to a movie today.
No.
But like, even for a movie.
Like, the tough part, based on how this is set up, is you got Bull Durham and Bad News Bears going against each other.
Which I don't know how
if,
you do that.
Though,
I mean, those are potential two seeds going
ahead
to head,
I don't know if I
too.
Would. I don't know if on that one if I could go with the first round upset, but that one there'd certainly be some discussions with the Bad News Bears on there because I really like both. Even so much, the old one and the new one.
Walter Matthau, yes. Buttermaker, yes. Kelly Leak riding his motorcycle across the outfield, smoking his cigarettes.
I think I watched the newer one maybe a week ago. So that's, and I watched Major League last week too.
So how does, in the new one, is it still Buttermaker? Is Billy Bob Thornton Buttermaker?
It is.
Still?
Yeah.
Okay. Any of the young actors that I would recognize in that?
No.
Just.
They're all little, I mean.
Kind of like the original Bad News Bears.
Same,
I mean,
same type of thing.
Other than Kelly Leak. And
Lupus is in there, yeah. You know. Yeah. Okay, so I like yours.
I'm Ahmad. This is for Allah, sucker.
I was on this really close to because I loved Rookie of the Year growing up.
Did you? Well, you're more in that.
I really
you're
did.
More in that demo because Bad News Bears was my growing up.
I would probably my final four. I think I would have if we're looking at this side of the bracket. So instead of Moneyball for you, I'd take Rookie of the Year. I would go Major League. I would go Field of Dreams. And then I don't know that top Sandlot because that was also in my wheelhouse too. That movie,
Sandlot.
Yeah,
that was kind of back when I was in college. A buddy of mine.
I might have to go with them in my final four too.
Can you text me that?
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Yeah,
because I might have to reseed that and then bring it
fun,
back.
Though. Yeah, well, that'd be fun. Just make sure you tag Kirsten on Twitter.
Okay, I will. Well, we might both have to reseed our own. And see where
that
goes.
Again. I think that's probably fair.
Okay.
You know, that's fair.
Because, I mean, everyone's going to have their own tastes, obviously.
Right.
And just looking at sort of the way she, you know, like Moneyball being essentially
this
as low as it is.
This would be fun to do for baseball. You know, we could do it for football. My all-time favorite football movie I already have down. And then we could probably do it for basketball.
So what's the all-time favorite football movie?
The Program.
See, that wouldn't be. Mine is Friday Night Lights.
That's a good one too. I just restarted that TV show.
Did
Friday
you?
Night Lights, yeah.
I don't think I've ever gone back and watched any of the we watched the whole TV series from start to finish.
Watching, yeah.
But
just restarted that.
Yeah.
Texas Forever.
Billy Bob Thornton in the Friday Night Lights originally. He was the head coach
true.
Of that as well.
Yeah.
So all right. NCAA baseball super regionals this weekend. Cliff Godwin, former assistant coach of yours.
Pirates, baby.
That's right. East Carolina. They're taking on Louisville in super regionals. This weekend, coached by
Dan
McDonald.
Before we get to baseball, did you watch any of the women's college World Series games? It was great. It was a walk-off to win.
Unfortunately, I didn't see a lot of it, but I was watching when that happened.
There was a lot of hype.
I think I watched the last
tournament.
Two or three innings of that.
There were some really good games.
Yeah, and it was pretty exciting stuff, some of the back and forth in that. I mean, Oklahoma's been a power the last few years. UCLA is, as a school, they've got more national championships than any other school, so they're hardly a Cinderella, but at the same time, it was it was very exciting. I'm glad that after all the home runs, the winning run scored from second base on a little bloop single. That was a more exciting play at the plate.
The Texas Leaguer.
That's right. Tell me about Cliff Godwin, former assistant coach of yours. Cliff always enjoyed talking to Cliff whenever I could. He's from the South. East Carolina is his alma mater, and that's where he's at. And he becomes...
Yeah, a little accent, too. Yeah.
Stars.
Yeah.
That's how I used to say my last name. Stars.
Stars.
That's right. But he's the second. He's the second former Notre Dame assistant.
That was good.
Former Maneri assistant, anyway, to get a team into the NCAA tournament. Of course, Brian O'Connor at Virginia, the other, and it's an interesting matchup because Cliff against Dan McDonald, a coach that you saw in the other dugout. So your impressions on each of those two college baseball head coaches?
Well, Cliff's, I love. He was one of my favorite coaches.
I imagine.
He was awesome. You know, player's coach was always, you know, he would never say no to wanting extra work. And kind of in the Maneri vein, too, which we touched on last week, Sean, was there were times where you maybe didn't like him, but you respected him, and you knew that he wanted you to be very successful.
He's going to push you to get better.
And that was really kind of, you know, whenever we were with him. And honestly, Paul really gave him a lot of freedom as a coach to develop and stay true to his style. You know, he'd put your arm around you, you know, his arm around you when you needed it. But there were a lot of days, too, where he was, you know, we need you today. So he was always, you know, kind of pushing the envelope as far as the development side. You know, I remember, you know, he'd be dripping sweat throwing us batting practice. You know, we'd be playing a guy who's maybe throwing mid-90s, and you don't always see that at the collegiate level, right? A lot of guys are, if they're throwing that hard early on, they're probably drafted out of high school. But you get some maybe juniors who are draft eligible who are having really good years, and he'd have us in the back cage, you know, from 30 feet away, and we'd have a velo drill where he would just be throwing
just as wing it
hard as he could. From that close and be like, all right, figure it out.
What's he going to do now?
So, yeah, he was, you know, I really enjoyed playing for him, you know, was bummed that time with both Paul and him, you know, was kind of cut short with Paul leaving to go to LSU. But we still stay in touch. You know, I'll talk with him every, you know, maybe 6 to 8 months just to check in and see how things are going. And I follow him on all the social media. He's got a great setup there. He's got a private jet to go and make recruiting calls on.
Godwin does?
Yeah.
At East Carolina.
I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
Yeah, he posted something. I don't know if it was on Instagram or Twitter, but he's hopping in a private jet with custom, you know, East Carolina. And maybe they share it with the football program. And
yeah, but still.
Other programs too. But I was like, man. I was like, look at that right there.
That's not bad at all. Take it if you can get it.
Why not?
That's for sure. Well, we kind of started talking about Notre Dame baseball a little bit last week and just sort of the state
not in the tournament.
Where things are.
No.
Yeah, and I mean, Notre Dame was in the NCAA tournament in 9 of Paul Menieri's 12 years at Notre Dame. Before that, in 4 of 7 years under Pat Murphy. So that's a really successful run. And when mm-hmm. you look at what they did in terms of teams in the North, really for close to 2 decades, they were the most consistent.
They were the team in the North.
Yeah, I mean, it was Ohio State and Michigan. Michigan back in the 80s and before was kind of there. Ohio State was probably the next most consistent team, but you've obviously seen, like, Indiana has sort of taken
Indiana
over
State
that to an extent.
Huge year this year.
Yeah, they did.
Northwestern has been pretty strong. So, you know, I think you're starting to see more northern programs. They are staking their claim as the new rulers of the North. Do you like that?
That's not bad. The Kings of the North?
Yeah.
Well,
that probably was terrible because I've never watched Game of Thrones.
That's all right. Well, I mean, the Big Ten used to be a one-bid league. Essentially, you had to win the Big Ten Conference to make it to the NCAA tournament. But
that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, they've reinvested in baseball just really within probably the last 10 years. Indiana and Purdue both have relatively brand-new facilities and nice facilities at that to go along with indoor and some of the other programs have made more of an investment. There was some stuff done at Ohio State, even though they've been down. I mean, the biggest thing that Ohio State did was Nick Swisher, you know, an Ohio State alum. He wanted his guy to, he was going to give some money to Ohio State. And when it came time for them to make a coaching change after Bobby Todd retired, he basically said, I'm not giving you the money unless you hire my guy. And so they hired his guy, but they haven't been as good.
Yeah. Yeah,
but the point is, like, when you go through the Big Ten, Illinois, they've had 4 bids since 2011. They're back in there this year. Before 2009, Indiana had 1 NCAA appearance ever, but they've been to 7 since 2009.
They've got something special going right now.
Yeah, with 3 different head coaches as well.
The previous head coach left and went to Mississippi State, if I believe, and then they just brought in Coach Mercer, who was at Wright State.
Yeah.
And if you look at what he did at Wright State in his time there, they were really, really good too.
Yeah.
And now he's at Indiana, and I believe he won. Did he win Big Ten Coach of the Year?
He might have.
They set records this year in the Big Ten. I think nationally, 2-4, all their power numbers, extra base hits, home runs, runs driven in, runs scored, all those things, they're breaking records. And so there's this big wave now within the Big Ten and really in Northern baseball where they're one, investing in the programs, like you're saying. If you want to get kids to come here, you got to have nice facilities.
Yeah.
And then it helps when you have success and you win, too. But how else are you going to get them here?
Well, and Notre Dame has addressed some of the facilities stuff a few years ago. They redid the clubhouse inside, and they've added other things. So they've started the external part, you know, there was a time when Frank Eck Stadium was probably the nicest in this part of the country, and then it fell back.
And,
so they're trying to catch up again.
You know, with the passing of Title IX and how the timelines work for improvements.
Right, what you had to do.
You know, there was, and I had this conversation, you know, there wasn't anything that went unwanted or gotten from Frank Eck if the baseball program wanted it.
Yeah.
And then when Title IX came along, and, you know, then there was the timeline between women's and men's sports, but not just baseball, softball, but, you know, across the whole thing on, mm-hmm. you know, if we're going to do an improvement here, okay, the next one is going to be over here. It could be a totally different sport. That kind of went away, and I think changed the dynamic of keeping up with the Joneses
yeah.
as far as the facilities were concerned.
And of course, Frank Eck's name is all over campus yeah. and other places as well. But, yeah, he absolutely did a lot. So, I mean, you've got – going back to what we were saying, I mean, you've got a lot of Big Ten teams who were not making NCAA tournament appearances 10 years ago when Notre Dame was kind of still there but not quite reaching. And again, Notre Dame has been to one tournament – since 2006, and that has been it. So they are not the traditional power.
There's no longer an excuse, though, to lose out in the Midwest because other teams are having success.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about this before, and the private versus public is an issue. The North is an issue. Mm-hmm. The whole thing being in the ACC is an issue because again, just to refresh people's minds, if they don't follow college baseball closely, there's 11.7 scholarships per team, and that's a big difference when you're talking a state school versus a private school. But when I look at programs like Wake Forest and Duke, which are comparable, now granted they're farther south, so you know they don't have the weather issues that Notre Dame has, but they also, I don't think, have the facilities that Notre Dame has. But when you look at those two schools, Wake and Duke, Duke's been in the tournament. This is the third time under Chris Pollard in his 4 years that Duke has been in the tournament. They had missed the tournament 54 straight years. And now all of a sudden, 3 out of 4 years, they're not just in the tournament, they're in the Super Regional for a second consecutive year as well. Wake Forest has been to the NCAAs 4 times since 2007. They've been a national seed before, too. So I'm not convinced that if those two schools can do it, that Notre Dame shouldn't at least be in the NCAA conversation every 3 to 4 years, regardless of, yeah, it's tougher being in the ACC than it was in the Big East. Yeah, you're a private school and you're doing these things, but I'm not convinced that if those two schools that were essentially also rans for decades and decades, if they can do it, you can't tell me that Notre Dame can't be in that conversation as well.
Do you want me to add to that?
I mean, jump on it.
I'm 100% with you. You know, I think that for far too long now, it's been relying on the crutch of, you know, you can't recruit in the North, you can't win at a private institution, you're limited by who can actually, you know, attend here. The monetary side of things, if you are trying to fill a scholarship, whether it's financial aid or partial scholarships and playing around with that.
Well, see, in there's another...
There's got to be a way.
Because there's another aspect of that as well. Vanderbilt has become the preeminent private school in the country. And again, you can say, well, they're in the SEC and they're warm. Okay, those are all... But Tim Corbin has been there since 2003.
But it's not like their other sports are really, really great.
No, exactly.
Their baseball program
He's been there since 2003. They've been in the tournament 15 of 17 years. Of course, they've won a national championship, finished runner-up. But one of the things that Vandy, and they had missed the NCAA tournament 22 straight years before Tim Corbin got there, and they had all of 3 tournament appearances in 90-plus years before Tim Corbin got there. And they've gone 15 out of 17 times and won a national championship. But one of the things that they have done as a private school, one of the things that Stanford has done as a private school specific to baseball, is they have lowered the family aid threshold. They've dropped it. So if your family makes below X amount of money, They've dropped it. I think it's around $100,000. If your family makes before that, you're going to qualify for more academic aid, which obviously helps offset that stuff that we're talking about with the scholarships.
It's so helpful, you know, to do those types of things. And, you know, there's a balance. And I'll be the first to admit, I would have never gotten to Notre Dame if it wasn't for the baseball and the football side of things for me. But I think there is, you know, that part of that discussion should be talked about a little bit more at a school where there is a balance between academics, certainly, you know, financial income to be able to make it feasible to go to a school like that.
Yeah.
You don't want to turn a kid away if he's a good, you know, he's a good high character person and he's really good at baseball.
I mean, two factors right there, right?
See, if he checks those two boxes, then let's find a way to make it feasible for him to get there.
Yeah, I mean.
And the other part of this too, which I know we're going to dive into this a little bit as well, is, you know, we're talking about a program that year in and year out at Notre Dame is putting guys into the major leagues. There are draft picks every single year. And if you look at, even dating back to when I was there with Dave Schrag, is the guys that were on that roster with him for that four-year period or so, and if you look at Aoki as well, the number of players that are either in minor league systems, near the top or rated in each organization, and now have reached the big leagues, you would assume that program has been very healthy at winning baseball games and potentially making postseason tournaments, and that has not happened.
We're way behind on a break, so we've got to take a break.
Right,
when we come back, we're going to have like 30 seconds probably, but let's get this break in. We'll come back. We'll add a few final thoughts before we wrap things up. Five-star dive bar downtown Elkhart, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Winding down, Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, five-star dive bar, 96.1 WSBT. We got less than a minute, Evan, so any final thoughts before we wrap things up today?
Yeah, let's have a win from Mishawaka.
Okay.
And a state championship for Bremen, the
girls in
softball.
So two wins tomorrow for the NIC.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would.
I think it'd be pretty cool.
Good luck to the Bremen softball team playing Tecumseh over at Purdue, and that game will start at right around 1:30 Eastern time, and that Mishawaka game we will have here on 96.1 WSBT pregame around 3:30.
Listen tonight at 6 o'clock for special guest who's going to be on your broadcast.
That's right. Special analyst will be on the broadcast tomorrow, and fans are going to want to hear who it is. So first pitch around 4 o'clock. We don't know who the starting pitch